You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. Hello, I'm Tina Spindler, and I'm here with Katrina Kirkaby. We are University of California Master Gardeners, and we are here to talk about what to do in the garden this month.
March is a busy month, Tina.
Yeah, so wow. Welcome to In the Garden with University of California Master Gardeners. This is probably the busiest month of the year, I think.
Indeed, there's so much to do, and this last week has been so warm. I can't believe it's been February.
Yes, we did get a tiny bit of rain in February, not as much as we would have liked. Hopefully we'll get more in March before our rainy season is over. And then with the little bit of heat, of course, it really just makes everything pop, and the trees are budding out and wildflowers are blooming. So we can tell that it's spring in Southern California, so we need to get busy.
Busy, busy, busy month. This month, I don't know about you, but this month and October are like my busiest months. How about you?
They are, for sure. And I think for a lot of people, March is busier. I think I'm probably busier in October because I like to do a lot of permanent planting and that sort of thing, and a lot of cleanup in October. But I think traditionally, a lot of folks like to do their main gardening in the springtime. And here in Southern California, March is our, actually February is kind of our springtime. We all noticed things turning green last month and
fruit trees blooming.
Exactly. But in March, for sure, it's officially the time in Southern California to switch from cool season plants to warm season plants. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
Well, where would you like to start, Tina?
Well, I do always love to talk about food, so shall we start with the veggie garden?
I love food.
Is your veggie garden still going strong with cool season stuff?
It's still growing strong. I'm a little bit worried about the heat last week.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff I think is going to, it won't probably make it, but we kind of always push it to the edge because I love cool season plants.
And what do you have in your garden for cool season this year?
Cauliflower, broccoli, lots of kale, lots of lettuces. It's just been so much fun, and we've been doing successive planting.
Awesome.
So I haven't bought a vegetable in months.
Wow, that's so cool.
How about you, Tina?
I just pulled out last week some of the lettuces because some of those bolted. So I had some arugula and some red lettuce that had bolted, so I pulled that out. But I have still going peas and carrots and beets and kale, and then I planted some new lettuces about a month ago. So I still have lots of stuff going, which is the challenge because I say we want to switch to warm season plants, but it's also a question of how much space you have. And if you're like me and you still have a lot of cool season stuff going, it's a challenge to start squeezing in that warm season stuff.
That's why sometimes I already buy the starts, because that way I cheat a little bit. You know, I could start them a little bit later because I buy a six-pack of something, and I could still keep my some of my winter stuff going.
Yeah, and I have just, over the last few years, personally, because the selection has gotten so much better, particularly with tomatoes, with the Tomato Mania events that happen throughout the county, that I kind of stopped growing tomatoes from seed because I would always end up with more plants than I had room for. So it's kind of better to just go buy that, you know, the six or eight tomato plants that I need from Tomato Mania or one of the other garden events that happens in the county in the springtime.
You know, a couple reasons I like doing that. One is I don't get 27 of the same tomato.
Exactly.
And then two is I get to cheat a little bit longer in my winter garden.
There you go. Yeah.
And then three, I'm kind of lazy about doing starts, you know, planting them by seed and then transplanting them. Sometimes I just don't have enough time.
Yeah, it's a little more work, for sure.
And going and buying that little 4x4 or whatever it is, you know, it's cheating. but it's not really cheating.
Everybody do it?
I mean, it's just easy.
It's not cheating.
Well, we all have busy lives.
Right.
You know, and whatever works for the person works for that person.
Exactly.
And it saves, for me, it saves a lot of time and energy, and it gives me a little bit more time to get the last bit out of my winter garden.
Sure. For the winter garden, I do plant a lot of stuff by seed because lettuce is and kale are so easy to grow from mm-hmm. seed. And, of course, the root vegetables, the carrots and the beets and the radishes prefer not to be moved. So those are better just direct sown. But in this time of year, I do, like you, buy the starts of the tomatoes and peppers. I would, if I ate eggplant, or if my family ate eggplant, I would buy eggplant already started as well. Sadly, my family doesn't like eggplant, so I don't plant that anymore.
You tried the Japanese eggplant.
I have, and I personally love it, but, you know, I don't want to grow it just for me because it's just easier to buy it.
Have you ever grilled it on the barbecue?
You know, I have not, but our friend and fellow master gardener, Kay Havens, introduced me to that years ago when I was over there for lunch, and instead of, like, grilled hamburgers, she served grilled eggplant on nice crusty rolls, and it was probably one of the best sandwiches I ever ate.
It is absolutely wonderful. I'm not a big fan of the big globe eggplant that you make, like, the big lobe ones, but the Japanese ones, they seem to have so much more taste, and sprinkle a little bit of salt on them and grill them. That's
my... I like their texture better, too.
Yeah.
They seem a little firmer. Is it my imagination? Or?
Well, when I put on the grill, they get pretty soft.
Yeah.
But I kind of like that softness.
Yeah.
But it's for me, it has more taste to it.
Got it.
And I really don't like it off the grill.
Yeah.
I mean, we all... Maybe I'm more like your family.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
No, it's like
maybe
how you
it's the way I prepared it that caused them not to like eggplant. That's probably it.
You know, we all have our different tastes.
Yeah.
You know, eggplant hasn't been my favorite, but when I get the certain kind of eggplant on the grill, it's like, oh, man, I could get kids eating it, too.
Yeah.
So if you get kids eating it, it's got to be pretty tasty.
You know it's good, for sure. Yeah. Well, so I do like to just go to the nursery, or occasionally big box places will have, you know, good veggies, and just buy the tomatoes and the peppers and the eggplant already started. But then I still go ahead and start the green beans from seed because I think that you can get better varieties, and they also seem to be do better. I've tried them in six packs, but I think the ones that I plant from seed seem to be a little more vigorous than the ones I try to plant from six packs.
And you like the French green beans, don't you?
I love the French green beans.
Those are
beans.
My favorite, too. They're more tender, in my opinion.
They are, and you pick them when they're young, so they're thin, and they just don't have that hard, chewy texture that we are the Kentucky Blue, you know, which I think is the variety that we see in the grocery store most of the time. So I really encourage you, for the price of a packet of seeds, try a couple of different varieties of beans. You know, there's the purple ones, you know, they kind of yellow ones. There's all different kinds. There's the flat Italian beans.
But try the French.
But do try the French.
French filet,
I think, is what they're generally called. So, but some of these veggies do really like some super warm weather. And so for the eggplants and peppers and melons also and pumpkins, I usually wait till April, mm-hmm. which is good because I've got so much cool season stuff in the garden right now. The main thing I plant in March, just because I can't wait to eat them, are the tomatoes. So this time of year, I will just make sure I find places to put, you know, half a dozen tomato plants, even if some of them are in pots, because I just can't wait to have those tomatoes.
I agree. Can we talk about tomatoes for
sure,
a couple minutes?
Sure.
I love having different kinds of tomatoes. And we've talked about this on the show before. You and I both get like an early girl because we can't wait. And it's a shorter time to harvest. So that's one of the first ones I plant.
And great flavor.
A wonderful flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah, just really, really nice. And I also, for the little ones, I like Sun Gold for the little cherry tomatoes.
Me too.
Oh, those are my favorite.
And that one just produces and produces and produces. It just kills itself. I mean, it just goes and goes and goes producing tomatoes.
And they're little cherry tomatoes, but they're just so tasty. I think they're the, for me, it's my favorite cherry tomato. How about you?
I think so, because it has what I call that true tomato flavor, which has a little bit of that tang, a little bit of that sharpness. You know, mm-hmm. they're sweet, but they also have that kind of zing that, you know, some other tomatoes, you know, have a nice mellow kind of flavor, but they seem to have that more intense tomato flavor, I think.
I think they're wonderful. And I also find little kids tend to like those.
Yes.
You know, you want to get your kids eating vegetables, and those little cherry tomatoes, it seems like they're the favorite of little ones.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they just love to pick them and, you know, stand there and eat them right in the garden, which is so fun.
I know. Isn't it great?
Yeah. So, do you have other tomatoes that are your favorites?
You know, I experiment too. How about you? What are your favorites?
I usually get the early girl and celebrity and then one of the big beef, because my husband likes the slicing tomatoes to have on, you know, burgers and sandwiches. Those are all hybrids, so they're pretty disease resistant. And then, like you, I also will grab some that I'm going to either haven't done before or are heirlooms that I've tried before and enjoyed them, but often with the heirlooms, at least in my garden, they don't last as long as the hybrids because they succumb to disease. And but I still like to, you know, get a few of them every year just because I do enjoy them when they're successful.
And how about you, Tina? I find with the heirlooms, I just don't get as much production.
Correct. I don't either. And then the season for me seems shorter because they just, you know, get some sort of, you know, black spot or even mildew or
mites
or whatever. So I like them, you know, like I like to plant, you know, a Cherokee purple and the zebra. What's the zebra one's name? Green zebra.
There's a blue, green zebra and a black zebra.
Yeah, I like the green zebra. So I will get, you know, several, and I'll try a couple. Mortgage lifter, I've tried that one before. So I will get several again this year, I'm sure, and we'll just, depends on the weather and the conditions, and we'll see which ones survive. But I'll still have my tried and true, you know, early girl and sun gold and celebrity.
And celebrity,
And the big beef, or the better beef. They've keep hybridizing that big beef one so that it supposedly gets better and better and hardier and hardier.
Yeah, I think we both would probably suggest if you only can plant a few plants, some that you know that are going to produce and that are easy. And then if you have time and extra room, experiment.
Right. And if you like to make sauces, be sure you include a Roma.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Roma tomatoes make great sauce because they're not as liquidy. They're meatier. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have too much liquid in the sauces that you're creating. The other thing is they are a determinate tomato. There's two main classes of tomato, determinate and indeterminate. And the determinate means that the plant grows to a certain height, and then it produces most of its fruit all at once. You know, it flowers, it sets fruit, and that's another reason why the Roma is a great one to make sauce out of, because you're going to get a lot of fruit at one time, so you'll be able to make a lot of sauce.
It's hard to make a sauce when you get one or two fruits at a time.
Exactly. And the indeterminate plants will just grow and grow and grow all season, which is one of the reasons we often say, oh my gosh, that is such an ugly plant at the end of, you know, towards the end of August or something, because they keep growing and they look so straggly. And I know I always have a hard time pulling them out because they still have, you know, tomatoes on them. But the indeterminate plants will just kind of grow and grow and grow and grow until the weather changes and it's not a good time for them anymore. But they'll produce fruit a much longer season than the determinate
ones. And which is really nice too, because then you just don't get it all at once. You go on vacation, you come back, and they're all gone. Versus you could have it week after week after week and after week. And
yeah,
you know, when I get all that, if I'm not canning or making sauce, what do you do with it? You know, my neighbors love it.
I was going to say, the neighbors for tomatoes are pretty thankful. For zucchini, maybe not as much.
They would not answer the doors.
Right. That's the other one. I think I did say squash, but zucchini is a type of squash, and you can also plant that from seed. Yeah. It's pretty easy to grow from seed.
Have you grown San Marzano?
I have not. Do you like that variety?
I like it because I haven't planted it in a couple of years, and last year I missed it because it's one of those... it seems to be the last one going for me. Now, Tina's able to do something. She has sun in her garden in this winter time, which she can overwinter, and she won't get as much fruit, but she gets a tomato here or there. Well, I live on a north side of a hill, and I'm done. You know, when the sun goes to a certain apex, it's like there's no more sun for me, so I'm done. But that San Marzano seems to be like the last one that I get.
Oh, wow.
That just kind of keeps going, and it's not the most perfect tomato, but it's at least for me,
Ooh.
It's something when I don't have something else.
I'm going to remember that and get one of those this year. I'd love to try that. Yeah.
So, tomato, now we're both smiling.
I know. So we'll give you just a couple other quick tomato tips, since if you're like me, you're going to want to get some in the ground this month. When you plant a tomato, like you plant anything, if it's in the ground at ground level, you want to amend that soil really well and dig down to about a foot, because tomatoes get some pretty good roots on them. And then when you plant it, you want to take off the bottom sets of leaves on the tomato stalk. And the reason you do that is this is one of the few plants that you bury deeply. Usually we always tell everyone to plant a plant even with the soil level. In other words, the top of the soil in the pot should be at the same level as the ground level soil. But in the case of tomatoes, you only need to have the top three or four sets of leaves showing. The other ones that are lower to the ground, you pick those off and you actually bury the stem, because where each of those leaves was, it'll send out new roots. And so by burying it more deeply, you end up having a sturdier plant, because it has sent out this, you know, very extensive root system, not just from the roots that are in the little 4-inch pot that you got, but it's going to be sending out roots along where you took those leaves off.
You know, it sounds so counterintuitive.
Yeah.
You know, you want to have a big tomato plant, so why are you sticking half of it in the ground?
Yeah.
Trust us.
It works.
Trust us. It works, because they have all those, you know, all those little feeders are out there, and they're grabbing the nutrients, and they're going to be making a sturdier plant, but also it's going to be a healthier plant, and it'll grow faster.
It will, and be just more vigorous, and a more vigorous tomato plant gives you more tomatoes. Do be sure that you add some organic fertilizer. Just do the simple thing and look for a fertilizer that says for tomatoes, because you want to have for tomatoes a fertilizer that isn't too high in nitrogen. And when you look at a fertilizer package, there's three numbers on it, and the numbers are the percentage of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And nitrogen is what makes a lot of green growth. So for tomatoes, you actually don't want a high nitrogen fertilizer, because you don't want just leaves. You want fruit. So you want to have that middle number be higher, the phosphorus number. So usually the tomato fertilizer, or it'll say tomato and vegetable fertilizer, because it's good for eggplant and peppers and so on. So if it's an organic fertilizer, it might be, the first number might be 4, the second number might be 6, and the third number might be, 4 or 3. But you want that middle number to be high, because it's the number that encourages flowers, which leads to fruit. So make sure you mix it in the soil when you prepare your hole, and do it according to the package directions. And then one other thing we have to tell you about for tomatoes is staking.
Absolutely.
Because they are not good plants about standing up straight. Mm-hmm. Just like my mother had to, harp on me to stand up straight. You have to help your tomatoes to stand up straight. And there are several different staking systems. What do you like best, Katrina?
Well, I think it depends on what you have. You know, if you have, you and I both have large lot of room available, so we both take that poles and put them in the ground, and we have that, was it concrete wiring?
Yeah, so Katrina and I like to use a system that uses tree poles, basically the tall poles that you use to stake a tree, and then concrete reinforcing wire. And what I like to do is I put them in the ground in a straight line and basically create a trellis, and then I espalier my tomato plants along that trellis.
Same here.
Yeah, and what it does is it opens up the plant to light and air so that you get less disease, helps your fruit ripen, and it takes up way less space.
Way less space.
Because if you get, we'll just tell you right now, don't ever buy the little tomato cages that are 3 feet tall. Those are good for peppers, but they're not good for tomatoes. Because unless you buy a patio tomato, but otherwise, tomatoes get way taller than 3 feet.
And you also might think about buying a tomato that's right size for the piece of property or your garden you have. You know, if you're growing in a pot versus in a bed, you know, how much room do you have? Because some of these indeterminate tomatoes, they just grow indeterminately.
Yes,
they grow and grow, and it's like, oh my goodness, what do you do? But there's some smaller size tomatoes that could fit. If you don't say you have enough room, there's tomatoes that you could get and put in a nice pot and sit on your patio too.
Sure. You can actually grow tomatoes that are indeterminate in a pot, but you do need to be careful that you stake them, and the pot has to be a big pot. So you want a pot that's probably, what would you say, 18 to 20 inches in diameter.
At least.
Yeah, or bigger. But the concrete reinforcing wire also makes a great trellis around a pot, because what you do is you just form it into a cylinder and you just put the cylinder over the pot. And then you can have basically this cage that the tomato grows in. And, you know, if you have this concrete reinforcing wire that's, you know, 5 or 6 feet tall, and you put that in your pot, and of course you have to anchor it with a stake that you tie it to, you know, now your tomato has this amazingly sturdy trellis. It's not going to be falling and breaking all over your yard. And what's cool about the concrete reinforcing wire is that the spaces between the wires are big enough to get your hands in so you can harvest the fruit.
Now, have you ever used, I believe they're called Texas tomato cages in pots?
I have. I personally have not, but I know several master gardeners who do use them, and they are wonderful. And the reason is they're made out of super sturdy gauge metal that is, it's not the thin wiry stuff that is in the traditional tomato cage. It's much heavier. And then what's also cool about them is they're hinged so that they collapse and lay flat for storing during the winter. So I know they're expensive. They're called Texas tomato cages, but everybody who uses them swears by them.
Now, I use the I have a bunch of the Texas tomato cages.
Do you?
Yeah. And before I found the concrete wiring, I used to use those.
Sure.
And I find for me in my bed, because I have enough room to use the concrete
reinforcing wire and the poles.
But if I had a pot, because those Texas tomato cages are so nice. They're all put together. All you do is unfold it, stick it in there.
Sure.
You know, and it's just easier than dealing with the concrete reinforcing.
Sure, yeah.
And they're small, and they collapse, and they're easy to store.
Yes, that's what I heard.
So in my head, I was thinking, I don't do pots, but if I did a pot, that would be an easy way, and they're tall enough.
Yes.
You know, they're tall enough.
Because they're what, 6 feet tall or so?
I think you could buy them at a couple different heights.
Yeah.
And I bought the taller ones,
yeah,
which I used a lot until we came up with the concrete wiring.
The trellising system.
The trellising system.
Yeah.
And that works for my yard.
Right.
But I was thinking if I had pots, that's just an easy thing to do. And it's a lot easier to store.
Right.
You know, when you're not using it. And they're really heavy duty. I've had mine for years and years, and they're just fine.
Yeah, I hear they last forever. They don't rust. And
you know, it's a bit of an investment.
Yeah.
But so is the concrete wiring with the poles.
Yeah. The other ways that you can stake is with the traditional, wooden stakes and string. But be sure you buy tall stakes because, you know, a 4 foot tall stake, by the time you pound it into the ground, just isn't going to be tall enough. So be sure you get 6 foot stakes or even better.
And strong line.
And you can do it, use that as a trellising system also where you do it in a straight line. Or you can use 3 stakes made in a triangle around a single plant and then use your string to wrap around the stakes, you know, and keep doing it as they grow so that they remain controlled within that string and stake area so they aren't flopping all over your garden.
And I think for both you and I, we have the room to be able to do a straight line. I like a straight line, but if I didn't have, because it just gets so much air and so much, and it's easy to pick from all both sides.
Well, and you can see the pests better too. Yeah. And the other thing Katrine and I do, because we learned this a few years ago, and since we've been doing it, we've had much healthier tomatoes, is pulling off the yellow leaves.
Yes.
As the leaves yellow, they attract more disease and bugs. So as your lower tomato leaves yellow, we go out, and with this trellising system, you can just pull those yellow leaves off pretty quickly because they're easy to see and they're not buried in the center of a plant. And by doing that, I think my plants are a lot more pest-free than they used to be.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So anyway, there's some good tomato hints, and I think we actually do have a whole show on tomatoes.
Yes, look at our website.
Look at our website.
If you're out driving about, Google UC Master Gardeners, Orange County, California, to make sure you get the right state. And we have a whole bunch of shows on that website.
Yes, we do. So before we leave edibles, though, let's talk about fruit trees a little bit. This is a month, if your fruit trees didn't start blossoming in February, some of mine started at the end of February, they will be blossoming this month and into April. And so be sure that you are just enjoying them, because first of all, a peach tree or a plum tree or apricot, any tree, apple in full blossom is just a sight to behold.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Just a sight to behold. You do want to fertilize all of your fruit trees this month, because they are going to be growing your fruit. And so you want to make sure they have nutrients with which to do that. And one tip on fertilizing is make sure that you fertilize, that you spread the fertilizer around the drip line, and the drip line is where the canopy of the tree ends, kind of like if you were envisioning rain, it would be water dripping off of the edges of that canopy. And the reason that you want to do it there and about a foot beyond that is that's where the feeder roots are. So don't chuck your fertilizer right up against the trunk. Make sure you spread your fertilizer in a nice ring around the drip line, and be sure that you water it in really well. And then also for your fruit trees, because our weather will be warming up, it's a good idea to apply mulch. So I try to remember to fertilize, scratch it in a little bit, and then water it well, and then apply a 3 to 4 inch layer of mulch on top of that, so that it preserves the water over the season as we get hotter and hotter.
It actually saves you money in the long run.
It does, and it keeps your weeds down besides, so extra bonus.
And it looks beautiful.
It does. Make sure
it cleans up your yard really nicely.
Makes it look really tidy. And then just read the package of fertilizer and see how frequently it suggests fertilizing your fruit trees, and try and stick to that. Put a little mark on your calendar so that you remember, you know, oh, I fertilized in, you know, March 3rd, and I should do it again a month from now. Because your plants will be a lot happier and give you a lot more production.
Exciting.
Yeah. Other things that you can plant edibles, you can do artichokes, you can do boysenberries or raspberries. Some of those could have been bought, you know, earlier in the year, you know, bare root. But this is the time of year, if you didn't get around to planting things bare root, you can buy fruit trees and berries in pots.
Artichokes, make sure if you get artichokes, you have plenty of room.
Oh my goodness.
They're
yes.
large plants.
Yeah, at least 6 feet in diameter, because those leaves, they're beautiful. You can actually, I think, use them in your front yard as a decorative plant because they're so structural, and they're a beautiful gray color.
Oh, and then if you let your artichokes go to seed, it's beautiful,
and then you
get bees.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like I always have to leave some. you can't eat them because they're just so pretty,
right?
And they look beautiful in bouquets too.
Yeah, they do. So So anything that you see that you want to try, this is the month to plant it. It's a great time for planting any edibles that you can imagine. And we just need to take a quick break and let you know that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. And that the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. And you can get more information about this show by going to KUCI.org. Okay, well, we should probably talk about the rest of the garden. Get out of the veggie garden before we run out of time.
I know, we could spend a whole hour on the veggie garden, can't we, this month?
Oh. Yeah. So just let's move to the decorative or flower garden. That's, as you know, always one of my very favorite things to talk about. And as we switched to warm season plants in the veggie garden, we need to switch to warm season plants in the flower garden if you're planting annuals. And so our cool season plants are probably going gangbusters right now. So you may or may not be able to start switching, you know, right away in March. But if you do have open areas, you do want to start switching to things like marigolds, petunias. I just planted some cosmos last week because they're one of my favorite summer flowers that just bloom forever and ever and ever. But you can also plant a lot of perennials this time of year. So I planted some delphiniums last week also. If I can keep the snails from eating them, those are perennials.
We're going to be talking about snails soon.
Yes, in a minute we'll talk about pests. But pretty much this is just the most fun time to go to the nursery because they have endless selections of perennials and annuals and, you know, lots of things that you're going to want to enjoy. Some of my favorite perennials, in addition to the ones that I mentioned already, are yarrow, also known as achillea. That is just beautiful. It gets these kind of flat, usually goldy yellow, but they also come in pink.
And white,
and white, yep. Then the native one is actually white. We have a native achillea in Southern California. The marguerite daisies, you know, those, I know those are kind of common, but man, do they give you a lot of bang for the buck.
Mm-hmm.
They just bloom and bloom and bloom, and then you can cut them back a little bit when they are finished with the first flush of bloom, and then you'll get another bloom, and they'll keep blooming, gosh, almost all year. I think they stop blooming maybe December and January, but otherwise they seem like they're blooming. Mine have started blooming. They started last month blooming again. So
you also have the touch, Tina.
Well, I don't know about that. Another one of my favorites is coreopsis. That's something else that just blooms nonstop throughout
it's
the warm weather.
It's easy to grow.
Almost totally pest and disease free. Yeah.
I've never had a problem with them.
Yeah. Dusty Miller, we usually plant as an annual, but it actually is a perennial, but they get a little rangy, so I often pull them out and plant new ones because you can get them in six packs, so they're pretty cheap. That's the gray foliage, and I really like that because it's one of those plants, like my Shasta daisies that I'm forever talking about, that pulls your whole yard together. Because it's gray, a gray plant or a plant that has white flowers will go with anything. And so I'm such a flower hog that if I didn't know better, I would just jumble, you know, reds with pinks, with oranges, with yellows, and it would just look like a total mess. But instead, by planting yellows in one spot, reds in another spot, pinks in another spot, and tying all of those together by using Dusty Miller or the Shasta daisies so that your garden mm-hmm. doesn't look like it's just this little, you know, pot of color here and pot of color here. By using those unifying plants, you can get some cohesiveness in your garden and manage to have all those colors without it being, you know, too crazy looking.
And I find out with both the Shasta daisies and the Dusty Millers, they're easy plants to grow.
Oh, another reason why I grow them. Again, almost virtually pest and disease free.
Just easy to grow, and they're nice fillers too.
Yep. And then I do like Status. That's the straw flower.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons I like that is because it is a perennial and blooms a good chunk of the year and is a great cut flower. And it makes a nice filler in a bouquet,
mm-hmm.
you know, that little hint of purple. And
mm-hmm.
then you can put in whatever else you have in season, whether it's bulbs. You know, like right now, I'm using it to go with some daffodils and freesias that I have in the garden. But it still is a nice, you know, filler mm-hmm. that fills up those, kind of like baby's breath.
Very much. I always think of those two of them very similarly as far as filler.
And it lasts for years. So I've grown baby's breath, and it's just very short-lived for me. It doesn't mm-hmm. last, the plant doesn't last very long. But man, I've had some of the status for years and years and years. I mean, those they finally get kind of
ugly
and rangy. But yeah, easily 5 years. Mm-hmm. Those things will last.
They do need a little bit of room.
They do. Yeah.
And you plant other things with them.
You do.
Because they're just kind of, almost by themselves, they're almost straggly.
Right. I like to plant them, I'll plant them near my roses, you know, because mm-hmm. The roses will kind of catch your eye and you won't notice the status, you know, if it's not looking perfect because the roses are blooming. And then, of course, I like status and roses in a bouquet together. That looks really pretty. So, yeah, so many perennials to choose from. So many.
Go plant.
Go plant. Just go.
Go to the. It's wonderful going to the nursery. Because you could say, I like this, I like this. Another thing to remember is layering your heights.
Yes.
So you want to, you know, start off something with small. You don't want them all the same size in your whole garden. You know, put the smaller things in the front and then another layer and then another layer and then your tallest in the back. And it gives us this beautiful depth. And then you're able to enjoy each individual plant.
Absolutely. The other thing I forgot to mention is lavender. Oh, lavender, even though we call that an herb, is just a fabulous flowering plant. And a lot of lavender started blooming last month, and they'll continue blooming.
My lavender is going crazy right now. It's an eyestopper right now because not everything is going crazy right now. But the lavender just popped up and said, here I am. Aren't I gorgeous?
And that's another one that's great to put with roses, I think. Just super, super pretty, the two of them together. With the lavender, don't expect it to last forever. They're usually, in my yard, 3, maybe 4 years, and then I replace them. They get woody, and it's not that they're disease-ridden, because they're not, but they just... I think you really have to stay on top of shearing them at the right time to stimulate the new growth. And sometimes I just don't get out there and do that. So,
oh my goodness, you're human along with the rest of us, huh?
But one thing I do this time of year is I make sure I fertilize my roses because I really, really want to have a great season of roses. And I actually started that in February. So we pruned in January, and then you don't fertilize when you prune. You wait until you have new growth. And so I saw some new growth on my roses towards the end of February. And so I fertilized all my roses. And then I'll fertilize them, you know, about once a month because that's the type of fertilizer that I'm using. So choose your fertilizer, read the directions. And with roses, if you want to have continuous blooming throughout the summer season, you have to deadhead them, cut off the ones that are finished blooming, and then you have to fertilize them regularly.
And listen to what Tina says. She has the most gorgeous roses. And every time you go into her yard, it's like they keep blooming and blooming and blooming. And she's smiling right now because she knows it's true.
They make me so happy.
Oh, my gosh.
But they do need food. You do have to keep them, like I said, deadheaded, and you got to feed them because it's like, you know, expecting an athlete to perform without giving them good nutrition. Yeah, so... but they're tough plants. I mean, if you forget and you feed them once a year, no worries. You just won't get as many flowers. That's all.
but if you have roses, you might as well have flowers.
Yeah, might as well.
Might as well.
I want them because I love to pick them and bring them inside. Along with all of this new growth and fertilizing, guess who's waking up? All of the pests in your garden.
Yes.
I was just out there. I bought some 6-packs of, you know, new annuals to start planting and left them out overnight and had a 6-pack of basil in there, you know, going to start planting the warm season stuff. The darn snails got after the basil in one night in the 6-pack. It was sitting on top of my compost bin because I didn't want it on the ground where I thought the snails would be. They climbed up the side of the darn compost bin and nibbled all of that basil, and then when I picked the 6-pack up, it was all these baby snails in the crevices, you know, on the underside of the 6-pack. So, yes, in my yard, the baby snails are going crazy.
Do you think it came from the nursery, or do you think it came from your yard?
Probably my yard. It's, you know, I'm just guessing. Maybe the nursery, but probably my yard. Anyway.
That's another point. We should always check our plants before we come home.
You're right. And I did not turn the six-pack upside down and look.
I forget to do that, too. Yeah. Most of the time, it's fine.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it's just fine. But once in a while, you'll find stuff under there.
So guess what I did? I spread snail bait.
Yes.
So be sure you get snail bait. There's two general kinds of snail bait. There's one that's an organic type, and it's an iron-based snail bait. One of the brand names, not that we recommend any brands, but one of the brand names is Sluggo. So if you see a Sluggo, look for the ingredient, and then you can look for other brands that have that same ingredient. And follow the directions and spread that out. And then there are some that are not organic. Metaldehyde is one of the ingredients, among others, in other non-organic snail baits. The reason I like the iron is it adds a little iron to the soil, not significant amount, but what the heck, you know, mm-hmm. I can use a little more iron in my soil. And it's anything is toxic. But it is less toxic than some of the others that, you know, are dangerous to, especially if you have pets. So be sure that you read the instructions, read the warnings, and choose the one that's right for your particular situation. And keep your pets indoors after you've applied snail bait. You don't want them eating any of the snail bait.
Especially you have young puppies.
Yes, who will eat anything. And then the other pests we should be concerned about is you'll see on your roses and other plants that have lots of new tender growth, lots of aphids probably waking up this month.
Oh, my.
And what I like to do for those is I just put that brass nozzle on my hose, the one that produces the real strong mm-hmm. jet stream of water, and I just hose those little guys off. And I just do that, you know, for a couple of days in a row, and usually that keeps them under control. But you can also use insecticidal soap if you have a pretty heavy infestation. But mostly you just want to be out in your garden frequently and catch things early so that you can get them under control.
So much easier if you catch it early. Investment now for future gain.
Yeah. And we do have a show on what's called integrated pest management, which just is a long phrase that basically means use the least toxic method that you can to control pests. And so for snails, that can be as simple as picking them off the plant and stepping on them. That's pretty simple and least toxic. And then if you have a disease that or a pest that you need help with, the best thing to do is to take it into a reputable nursery that has, you know, knowledgeable folks, or take a picture of it on your phone and email it to the Master Gardener hotline. And someone will look at it and identify it for you and give you some tips on how to take care of it.
They're wonderful.
Yeah.
They really are wonderful.
Or you can Google integrated pest management and look for the UCIPM website. And that is just an incredible wealth of knowledge, and it's organized by plant type. So you can type in roses, and it'll take you right to the rose page, or type in tomatoes, and it'll take you right to the tomato page. So be sure that you take advantage of those resources.
They're great resources. It's easy reading, too. It speaks to the public. They're not talking to a professional. They're talking in terms that you and I can understand.
Exactly.
You know what else I like to do? This sounds horrible with the snails. We go out late at night. Like, we take our dogs out for a potty, uh-huh. you know, at nighttime. And they seem to be a certain time of year, the snails do this march across the grass. To the flower garden.
Yeah.
Right across the grass, and you got a flashlight, you could crunch a lot of snails in a very short period of
time. Just go snail stomping.
Snail stomp, or you collect them and give them to your friends that have chickens, put them in a Ziploc bag.
Oh.
The chickens love the snails.
That's a nice treat. So, I used to pay the little kids in our neighborhood a nickel. I know a nickel doesn't go far, but, you know, they'd go collect 10 snails, and I'd give them 50 cents, and, you know, they could buy a candy bar, so.
Good deal. Whatever works for you, right?
Yeah. Well, how much time do we have left, Katrina?
Probably about 15 minutes.
Oh, good, because I did want to talk a little bit about lawns.
10 minutes or so. Yeah.
Okay.
10, 15.
I want to talk a little bit about lawns because some of us still have lawns, and lawns are not all bad if you manage them appropriately. Don't have endless amounts of lawn. Monitor your water. That's the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the time of year to get your lawn ready for summer. So if you didn't aerate your lawn in February, it's a good time to do it in March. And the way you aerate it is, if you have a big lawn, you can rent a machine that basically pokes holes in your lawn and takes out little cores of soil. And what that does, particularly where we live in Orange County, where most of us have clay soil, is it takes some of that dense soil and opens it up by putting these holes in. And that allows your fertilizer to get in there better, the watering to get in there better, and that will cause you to have a healthier lawn if you're able to, you know, water deeply and get food down there deeply. And then we should be...
And then it saves you money on watering.
It does. It saves you water money on watering. And the other thing it does is it helps you not have runoff, because if you have this really hard-packed soil and the, you know, water can't get down in there, it's going to run off into, you know, the sidewalk or the driveway or the street. So that's a great thing to do. And then after I aerate... I actually don't use the machine. I have just a manual, kind of looks like a,
pitchfork?
A pitchfork, yeah. It kind of looks like a pitchfork. But it just has two prongs, and they're held together by a horizontal bar across, and then you can step on that horizontal bar and push those two prongs down into the soil. And the prongs are hollow, so they'll take a core of soil out. And so I don't do it all in one day, but I'll go out and do a, you know, 10 by 5 rectangle where I just, you know, go around stomping and making these little holes in my lawn so that it's aerated. And over the course of a couple of days, I end up doing my lawn. And then what is a great thing to do this time of year, for both cool season and warm season lawns, there are basically two types. A cool season lawn does not like hot weather. It grows most actively when the weather is cooler. And the warm season lawns are the opposite. They grow more actively when the weather is hot, and they are kind of dormant in the wintertime. So in fact, if you have a warm season lawn, then it might look kind of brown. So Bermuda and Zoysia, it's always hard for me to say that, are, you know, warm season lawns. Warm season lawns. And so because they're going to be waking up in March, getting ready for the hot weather, you can start fertilizing them now. But the cool seasons, because the weather is still cool-ish, you can continue fertilizing them up until June. And then I don't fertilize mine in July, August, or September because they're just not real happy with the heat. So just kind of leave them alone and not encourage them with too much fertilizer. A rule of thumb for fertilizer for any plant is you want to give it fertilizer when it is actively growing. So we don't give deciduous fruit trees fertilizer in January when they have no leaves because they're not actively growing. That's why we don't give the roses fertilizer when we first prune them, because they're really not actively growing yet. So you can fertilize both of your lawns. And a lot of us have fescues, and those are a cool season lawn. So just a little brief info about lawns so that your lawns look amazing this spring and summer when you're going to do so much entertaining with Mother's Day and
birthdays,
weddings and 4th of July.
And friends just coming over to visit. You know, it's time to be outside with barbecues and enjoy the outdoors. And it's so nice when you have, you invest right now and it's going to pay off in 2-3 months.
Exactly.
Even if you invest right now, it pays off now because your yard will look better.
Yes, for sure. And then some of the other grasses, the clumping grasses, you know, like the fountain grass and others, if you didn't, it's a good idea to give them a haircut once a year. And if you didn't give them a haircut, you know, in the winter season, I like to trim mine down because I think that they just look pretty scraggly if you don't trim them at least once a year. But ideally, you probably should have done it a month or two ago because a lot of them get pretty heads, you know, blossomy kind of heads in the springtime. So look up your grass if you know what it is and determine whether it's a good time. It's also a great time to plant new lawns. So if you have a new house, some folks, they are still building a few new houses here and there. So if you do want to have a new lawn, we don't encourage huge lawns because they take so much water, but it is a good time to plant new lawns. Or as I will be doing this month, I will be spreading some seed in a few patchy areas where I let some plants that were blooming, like chrysanthemums, overgrow and cover up the lawn. And then, of course, the lawn died out.
Yeah, mine's the Mexican sage.
The Mexican sage did it to yours, yeah.
And then I also have two dogs.
There you go.
So yeah, you could follow their little piddle spots around.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is a great time of year to get some new seeds down and get those bare patches filled in. And then the last thing, if we have another minute left.
We have another minute left.
Is to let you know that if you are going to plant and change over some of your yard to drought-tolerant or California natives, I recommend doing it this month. We suggested starting it in late October, November, December, January, February. Do it this month if you didn't have a chance to do it then. You want to do it before the weather gets hot. So try and do it in March, very latest April. I wouldn't go beyond April.
That's planting. Really pushing it because These plants, they need water. It sounds drought-tolerant, but while they're babies, they need lots and lots of water. And you don't want to be running up your water bill right now. Also, you want to plant them in zone appropriate.
Yes.
You don't want to plant your hydrangeas with your drought tolerant.
No.
So look at water usages when you're doing this.
They all need to be in the same irrigation zone so that they're happy. Yeah.
Exciting. Well, Tina, we're just about there. We have a couple minutes left. If I may talk about things that we should buy today or just recap a few things.
Sure.
So in the month of March is wonderful planting months. You can plant your annuals, your marigolds, and cosmos. You can go out and get your yarrow, more of your
perennials,
get yarrow, marguerite daisy, coreopsis, Shasta daisies. Just go plant, have a good time. As far as planting vegetables, it's a great time to start you with your six packs. Remember to plant your tomatoes. Our suggestions are at least get like a celebrity or an early girl, something that we know that's going to produce, and then go from there. It seems like it's a real big fertilizer month. So we want to fertilize our fruit trees, our roses, make sure we've fertilized when we plant our new vegetables and plants. We also have to watch out for insects and insects like aphids, so keep an eye on those, and snails. Keep an eye on what's going to happen with the snails. You know, you want to keep that under control. We also want to aerate our lawn, and depending what it is, we might want to fertilize it. And I think that might be recapping. Anything else you could think about?
Just have a great time. Be sure that you do wear your sunscreen and a hat. I had a little skin cancer this past year, so I want to remind everybody to be sure and be safe out there.
Be safe, drink lots of water, and enjoy your garden. You know, some people look at it as a labor of love, and some people look at it as labor. You know, I hope you fall into the first category as a labor of love, because that's what it's supposed to be. You know, gardens are so good for the mind, body, and soul.
Start small. I know I tend to buy too many things at the nursery because I get so excited.
Oh, last thing, before you buy stuff, go and dig holes for what you're going to do or know where you're going to put it. Because we all get excited this time of year and we come home with more plants than we can fit in our yard. Or we come home and then we don't have time to plant them. So you might think about, you know, digging the holes first and where are you going to put what. So, like, you're not like Tina and I come home and going, oh, my gosh, we have a big yard, but we have no room to put all this stuff. So something else to think about, but maybe everybody doesn't get like you and I, like, it's so exciting, like, I want everything.
It's hard not to, even if you're, you know, not a crazy gardener like us. Everyone who goes to the nursery in spring just gets inspired and kind of want one of everything.
Yes, indeed. Well, we hope you have a wonderful, happy, and joyous month in your garden and really, really enjoy it and have fun. And we'll be talking to you next month.